"Help me," she yelled. "Fight!" The blade skittered across the asphalt. The old man backed away, keeping his shopping cart between himself and the battle. The wolves lunged at Alex. Finally, she tried to change into something larger, maybe a buffalo or a bear, it was hard to tell, but I guess she didn't have enough strength. She collapsed back into human form as the wolves tackled her and brought her down. She fought ferociously, wrapping her garrote around the neck of one wolf, kicking the other. But she was outmatched and had lost too much blood. She managed to choke the larger wolf. It slumped over, crushing her. The last beast took her by the throat. She wrapped her fingers around its neck, but her eyes were losing focus. Much too late, the old man picked up the knife. He edged toward the last wolf. With a horrified shriek, he drove the blade into its back. The monster fell dead. The old man stepped away from the scene. Three dead wolves, their fur still glowing in faint clouds of neon blue. Alex Fierro, her final breath rattling in her chest, a pool of blood spreading around her like a halo. The old man dropped the knife and ran away sobbing. The camera zoomed in as Samira Alabas descended toward the fallen warrior. Sam reached out. From the broken body of Alex Fierro, a shimmering golden spirit floated up, already scowling at the unexpected summons. The video went dark. It did not show Alex arguing with Sam, punching her in the eye, or causing chaos when she finally reached Valhalla. Maybe Sam's camera ran out of batteries. Or maybe Sam intentionally ended the video there to make Alex look like more of a hero. The feast hall was quiet, except for the crackle of tiki torches. Then the Inheriar burst into applause. The Thanes rose to their feet. Jim Bowie wiped a tear from his eye. Ernie Pyle blew his nose. Even Helgi, who had looked so angry a few minutes ago, openly wept as he clapped for Alex Fierro. Samira looked around, clearly stunned by the reaction. Alex might as well have been a statue. Her eyes stayed fixed on the dark place where the video screen had been, as if she could make her death rewind by sheer force of will. Once the ovation quieted, Helgi raised his goblet. "Alex Fierro, you fought against great odds, with no thought for your own safety, to save a weaker man. You offered this man a weapon, a chance to redeem himself in battle and achieve Valhalla. Such bravery and honor in a child of Loki is truly exceptional." Sam looked like she had some choice words to share with Helgi, but she was interrupted by another round of applause. "It's true," Helgi continued, "that we have learned not to judge Loki's children too harshly. Recently, Samira Alabas was accused of un-Valkyrie-like behavior, and we forgave her. Here again is proof of our wisdom." More applause. The Thanes nodded and patted each other on the back as if to say, "Yes, wow, we really are wise and open-minded. We deserve cookies." "Not only that," Helgi added, "but such heroism from an augur." He grinned at the other Thanes to share his amazement. "I don't even know what to say. Truly, Alex Fierro, you have risen above what we would expect from one of your kind. To Alex Fierro," he toasted. "To bloody death!" "Bloody death!" the crowd roared. No one else seemed to notice how tightly Alex was clenching her fists, or the way she glared at the Thanes' table. My guess was that she hadn't appreciated some of his word choices. Helgi didn't bother calling a Vala, or seer, to read Alex's destiny in the runes like he did when I first arrived in Valhalla. He must have figured the Thanes already knew that Fierro would do great things when we all charged to our deaths at Ragnarok. The Inheriar kicked into full party mode. They laughed and wrestled and called for more mead. Valkyries buzzed around in their grass skirts and leis, filling pitchers as fast as they could. Musicians struck up some Norse dance tunes that sounded like acoustic death metal performed by feral cats. For me, two things dampened the party mood. First, Mallory Keane turned toward me. "You still think Alex is a legitimate Inheriar? If Loki wanted to place an agent in Valhalla, he couldn't have arranged a better introduction." The thought made me feel like I was back on Randolph's boat, being tossed around in 15-foot swells. I wanted to give Alex the benefit of the doubt. Sam had told me it was impossible to cheat your way into Valhalla. Then again, since becoming an Inheriar, I ate impossible for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The second thing that happened, I caught a flash of movement somewhere above me. I glanced at the ceiling, expecting to see a high-flying Valkyrie or maybe one of the animals that lived in the Tree of Labrador. Instead, 100 feet up, almost lost in the gloom, a figure in black reclined in the crook of a branch, slow clapping as he watched our celebration. On his head was a steel helmet with the face mask of a wolf. Before I could even say, "Hey, look, there's a goat killer in the tree," I blinked and he was gone. From the spot where he'd been sitting, a single leaf fluttered down, and landed in my mead cup. Chapter 12. Samira and Magnus sitting in a tree. T-A-L-K-I-N-G. As the crowd streamed out of the hall, I spotted Samira flying away. "Hey!" I shouted, but there was no way she could have heard me over the rowdy in Harriar. I pulled off my pendant and summoned Jack. "Fly after Sam, will you? Tell her I need to talk to her."
"I can do better than that," Jack said. "Hang on."
"Whoa, you can carry me?"
"For a short hop, yeah."
"Why didn't you tell me that sooner?"
"I totally mentioned it. Plus, it's in the owner's manual."
"Jack, you don't have an owner's manual.
Just hang on.
Of course, once you put me back in pendant form, you'll feel like I've been carrying myself through the air," I guessed. "And I'll pass out or whatever. Fine, let's go." There was nothing graceful about flying Jack Air. I did not look like a superhero or a Valkyrie. I looked like a guy dangling from the hilt of a sword as it shot skyward, my butt clenched, my legs swinging wildly. I lost a shoe somewhere over the 20th tier. I nearly fell to my death a couple of times. Otherwise, yeah, great experience. When we got within a few feet of Sam, I yelled, "On your left!" She turned, hovering in midair. "Magnus, what are you... Oh, hey, Jack."
"Sup, Lion Lady. Can we put down somewhere? This guy is heavy."
We landed on the nearest branch. I told Sam about the goat assassin lurking in Labrador, and she zipped off to alert the Valkyries. About 5 minutes later, she came back, just in time to cut short Jack's rendition of "Hands to Myself."
"That is disturbing," Sam said.
"I know," I said. "Jack cannot sing Selena Gomez." "No, I mean the assassin," Sam said. "He's disappeared. We've got the entire hotel staff on alert, but," she shrugged, "he's nowhere."
"Can I finish my song now?" Jack asked.
"No," Sam and I said. I almost told Jack to go back to pendant form. Then I remembered that if he did, I would probably pass out for 12 hours. Sam settled on the branch next to me. Far below, the last of the dinner crowd was exiting the hall. My friends from floor 19, TJ, Mallory, and Halfborn, surrounded Alex Fierro and guided her along. From here, it was hard to tell if this was a congratulatory, buddy kind of escort or a forced march to make sure she didn't kill anyone. Sam followed my gaze.
"You've got doubts about her, I know. But she deserves to be here, Magnus. The way she died, I'm as sure about her heroism as I am about yours."
Since I'd never been confident about my own heroism, Sam's comment didn't ease my mind.
"How's your eye?"
She touched the bruise.
"It's nothing. Alex just freaked out. It took me a while to understand, but when you take someone's hand and lead them to Valhalla, you get a glimpse into their soul."
"Did that happen when you took me?"
"With you, there wasn't much to see. It's very dark in there."
"Good one," Jack said.
"Is there a rune that would make both of you shut up?" I asked.
"Anyway," Sam continued, "Alex was angry and scared. After I dropped her off, I started to realize why. She's gender fluid. She thought that if she became an Inherii, she'd be stuck in one gender forever. She really hated that idea."
"Ah," I said, which was short for, "I get it, but I don't really get it." I've been stuck in one gender my whole life. Never bothered me. Now I wondered how that would feel for Alex. The only analogy I could come up with wasn't a very good one. My second grade teacher, Miss Mangler, a.k.a. Miss Mangler, had forced me to write with my right hand even though I was left-handed. She'd actually taped my left hand to the desk. My mom had exploded when she found out, but I still remembered the panicky feeling of being restrained, forced to write in such an unnatural way because Miss Mangler had insisted, "This is the normal way, Magnus. Stop complaining. You'll get used to it." Sam let out a sigh. "I admit, I don't have much experience with..."
Jack leaped to attention in my hand.
"Argers? Oh, they're great! One time me and Frey..."
"Jack," I said.
His runes changed to a subdued magenta.
"Fine. I'll just sit here like an inanimate object."
That actually got a laugh out of Sam. She had uncovered her hair, as she often did in Valhalla. She told me that she considered the hotel her second home, and the Inherriar and Valkyries part of her family, so she didn't feel the need to wear the hijab here. Her dark locks spilled around her shoulders, and her green silk scarf hung around her neck, shimmering as it tried to activate its magical camouflage. This was a little unsettling, since every once in a while Sam's shoulders and neck seemed to disappear.
"Does Alex Fierro bother you?" I asked. "I mean, her being transgender? Like with you being religious and all?"
Sam arched an eyebrow. "Being religious and all, a lot of things bother me about this place.
she gestured around us. I had to do some soul-searching when I first realized my dad was, you know, Loki. I still don't accept the idea that the Norse gods are gods. They're just powerful beings. Some of them are my annoying relatives. But they are no more than creations of Allah, the only god, just like you and I are. You remember I'm an atheist, right? She snorted. Sounds like the beginning of a joke, doesn't it? An atheist and a Muslim walk into a pagan afterlife. Anyway, Alex being transgender is the least of my problems. I'm more worried about her connection to our father. Sam traced the lifeline on her palm. Alex changes shape so often. She doesn't realize how dangerous it is to rely on Loki's power. You can't give him any more of a hole than he already has. I frowned. Samira had told me something like this before, how she didn't like the shapeshift because she didn't want to become like her dad. But I didn't understand it. Personally, if I could shapeshift, I'd be turning into a polar bear like every 2 minutes and scaring the saber-mnear out of people. What kind of hold are we talking about? She wouldn't meet my eyes. Forget it. You didn't fly after me to talk about Alex Fierro, did you? True. I described what had happened on the battlefield. The dragon and the way Loki had invaded my head wearing an offensive tuxedo and invited me to a wedding. Then I told her about my dreams, and how apparently this marriage just happened to be Sam's to some bar-owning, walrus-voiced giant named Thrym, who served the worst-smelling pickles in Jotunheim. Some of this Jack hadn't heard yet, either. Despite his promise to remain inanimate, he gasped and cried, "You're kidding me!" at all the appropriate spots, and some of the inappropriate ones. When I was done, Sam stayed quiet. A waft of cold passed between us like a Freon leak from an AC. Down below, the cleaning crew had moved in. Ravens picked up the plates and cups. Bands of wolves ate the leftover food and licked the floor clean. We were all about hygiene here in Valhalla. "I wanted to tell you," Sam said at last. "It all happened so quickly, it just came crashing down on me." She wiped a tear from her cheek. I'd never seen Sam cry. I wanted to console her, give her a hug, pat her hand or something. But Sam didn't do physical contact, even if I was part of her extended Valhalla family. "That's how Loki is messing with your personal life," I guessed. "He came to see your grandparents, Amir?" "He gave them invitations." Sam dug one from her pocket and handed it across. Gold cursive on green cardstock, just like the one Loki had tucked into Uncle Randolph's pocket. "The incomparable Loki and some other people invite you to celebrate with them the marriage of Samira Alabas bint Loki and Thrym, son of Thrym, son of Thrym. When? 5 days hence. Where? We'll get back to you. Why? Because it's better than doomsday. Gifts are welcome. Dancing and wild pagan sacrifices to follow." I looked up. Wild pagan sacrifices? You can imagine how that went over with my grandparents. I studied the invitation again. The when section shimmered. The five slowly fading, turning into a four. The where section also had a holographic sheen, as if it might eventually change to a specific address. "Couldn't you tell your grandparents this was a prank? Not when my father delivered it personally." "Oh." I pictured Loki sitting at the Alabas' dining table, sipping tea from one of their lovely gold cups. I imagined Jeed's Santa Claus face getting redder and redder, Bibi doing her best to keep her regal poise while angry steam spewed from the edges of her hijab. "Loki told them everything," Sam said. "How he met my mom, how I became a Valkyrie, everything. He told them they had no right to arrange a marriage for me because he was my dad and he had already arranged one." Jack quivered in my hand. "On the bright side," he said, "that's a very nice invitation." "Jack," I said. "Right, inanimate." "Please tell me your grandparents were not okay with that," I said. "They don't expect you to marry a giant." "They don't know what to think." Sam took back the invitation. She stared at it as if hoping it would burst into flames. "They'd had their suspicions about my mother's relationship. Like I told you, my family has been interacting with the Norse gods for generations. The gods have this attraction to my clan." "Welcome to the club," I muttered. But Jeed and Bibi had no idea of the extent of it until Loki showed up and sent them reeling. What hurt them most was that I'd kept my life as a Valkyrie from them. Another tear traced the base of her nose. "And Amir." "The video we saw on Valkyrie Vision," I guessed. "He and his father came over this morning and you tried to explain." She nodded, picking at the corner of the invitation. "Mr. Fathon doesn't understand what's going on. Just that there's a disagreement of some kind. But Amir, we talked again this afternoon, and I told him the truth, all of it. and I promised that I would never agree to this crazy marriage with Thrym. But I don't know if Amir can even hear me at this point. He must think I'm out of my mind.
We'll figure it out, I promised. There's no way you're going to be forced to marry a giant.
You don't know Loki like I do, Magnus. He can burn down my whole life. He's already started. He has ways of...
She faltered.
The point is, he's decided that he is the only one who can negotiate for Thor's hammer. I can't imagine what he wants out of the deal, but it can't be good. The only way to stop him is to find the hammer first.
Then we'll do that, I said. We know this guy Thrym has it. Let's go get it. Or even better, just tell Thor and make him do it.
Across my knees, Jack hummed and glowed.
It won't be that easy, Signor. Even if you could find Thrym's fortress, he wouldn't be stupid enough to keep Thor's hammer there. He's an earth giant. He could have buried it literally anywhere under the earth.
The White's Barrow, Sam said.
In Provincetown, I said.
You still think that's our best bet? Even with this goat killer stalking us, telling us it's a trap?
Sam stared right through me. She seemed to be watching the horizon, imagining a mushroom cloud rising from the nuke Loki had dropped on her future.
I have to try, Magnus. The White's Tomb. First thing in the morning.
I hated this idea. Unfortunately, I didn't have a better one.
Fine.
You contacted Harth and Blitz?
They're meeting us on Cape Cod.
She rose and crumpled up the wedding invitation. Before I could object that we might need it, she tossed it to the ravens and wolves.
Meet you after breakfast. And bring a coat. It'll be a chilly morning to fly.
Chapter 13. Relax, it's just a little death prophecy. Sure enough, once Jack became a pendant again, I passed out for 12 hours. In the morning, I woke with sore arms and legs, feeling like I'd spent the whole night flapping through the air with an inheri hanging from my ankle. Alex Fierro was conspicuously absent from breakfast, though TJ assured me he'd slipped a note under her door explaining where the lounge was for floor 19. She's probably still asleep, TJ said. She had a big first day.
Unless she's that mosquito right there.
Halfborn pointed to an insect crawling across the salt shaker.
That you, Fierro?
The mosquito said nothing. My friends promised to stay on high alert, ready to do whatever was needed to help stop Loki from holding his shotgun wedding in 5, now 4, days.
We'll also keep an eye on Fierro, Mallory promised, scowling at the mosquito.
I just had time to scarf down a bagel before Sam arrived and led me to the stables above the floor 422 exercise room. Whenever Sam said, "We're going to fly," I couldn't be sure what she meant. Valkyries were perfectly capable of flying on their own. They were strong enough to carry at least one other person, so maybe she intended to put me in a large tote bag and schlep me to Cape Cod. Or she might have meant fly, as in, we're going to tumble off a cliff and plummet to our deaths. We seemed to spend a lot of time doing that. Today, she meant riding a flying horse. I wasn't clear on why Valkyries had flying horses. Probably just because they looked cool. Besides, nobody wanted to ride into battle on a lindworm, flapping and bouncing around like a turkey snake cowboy. Sam saddled a white stallion. She climbed on his back and pulled me up behind her. Then we galloped out the gates of the stable, straight into the skies above Boston. She was right about the cold. That didn't bother me, but the winds were strong, and Sam's hijab kept fluttering into my mouth. Since hijabs represented modesty and piety, I doubted Sam wanted hers to look like I'd been chewing on it. "How much farther?" I asked. She glanced back. The bruise under her eye had faded, but she still seemed distracted and exhausted. I wondered if she'd slept at all.
"Not long now," she said. "Hang on."
I'd flown with Sam enough times to take that warning seriously. I clenched my knees against the horse's ribcage and wrapped my hands around Sam's waist. As we plunged straight through the clouds, I may have screamed, "Mainfurter!" My butt went weightless in the saddle. FYI, I do not like having a weightless butt. I wondered if Sam flew her airplane like this, and if so, how many flight instructors she had sent into cardiac arrest. We broke through the clouds. In front of us, Cape Cod stretched to the horizon, a parenthesis of green and gold in a blue sea. Directly below, the northern tip of the peninsula made a gentle curlicue around Provincetown Harbor. A few sailboats dotted the bay, but it was too early in the spring for many visitors. Sam leveled us off at about 500 feet and flew us along the coast, racing over dunes and marshes, then following the arc of Commercial Street with its gray shingled cottages and neon-painted gingerbread houses. The shops were mostly shut down, the streets empty.
"Just scouting," Sam told me.
"Making sure an army of giants isn't hiding behind the Mooncusser tattoo shop?
Or sea trolls, or whites, or my father, or..."
"Yeah, I get the idea."
Finally, she banked us left, heading for a gray stone tower that loomed on a hill at the edge of town. The granite structure rose about 250 feet and had a turreted top that resembled a fairy tale castle. I had a vague memory of seeing the tower during my visit here as a kid, but my mom had been more interested in hiking the dunes and walking the beaches. "What is that place?" I asked Sam. "Our destination." A faint smile tugged at her mouth. "The first time I saw it, I thought it was a minaret for a mosque. It looks sort of like one."
"But it's not?"
She laughed. "No, it's a memorial for the pilgrims. They landed here before they moved to Plymouth. Of course, Muslims have been in America for a long time, too. One of my friends at mosque, she has an ancestor, Yusuf Ben Ali, who served with George Washington during the American Revolution." She stopped herself. "Sorry, you didn't want a history lesson. Anyway, we're not here for the tower. We're here for what's underneath."
I was afraid she wasn't talking about the gift shop.
We flew around the monument, scanning the clearing at its base. Just outside the tower's entrance, sitting on the stone retaining wall and swinging their feet like they were bored, were my two favorite people from alien worlds. "Blitz!" I yelled. "Hearth!" Hearth was deaf, so yelling his name didn't do much good, but Blitz nudged him and pointed us out. They both jumped off the ledge and waved enthusiastically as our horse came in for a landing. "Kid!" Blitzen jogged toward me. He could have been mistaken for the ghost of a tropical explorer. From the rim of his pith helmet, a screen of white gauze covered him down to his shoulders. The gauze, I knew, was custom designed to block sunlight, which turns dwarfs to stone. He'd also put on leather gloves to protect his hands. Otherwise, he was wearing the same outfit I'd seen in my dream. A walnut three-piece suit with a black bow tie, snappy pointed leather shoes, and a bright orange handkerchief for flair. Just the thing for a day excursion into a tomb of the undead. He tackled me with a hug, almost losing his pith helmet. His cologne smelled like rose petals. "Hammers and anvils, I'm glad to see you." Hearthstone ran up next, smiling faintly and waving both palms in the ASL gesture for "Yay!" For Hearth, this was the equivalent of ecstatic fanboy screaming. He wore his usual black leather jacket and jeans, with his twister dot scarf wrapped around his neck. His face was as pale as ever, with the perpetually sad eyes and the spiky platinum hair, but he had fleshed out a bit in the past few weeks. He looked healthier, at least by human standards. Maybe they'd been ordering a lot of pizza while they hid out in Mimir's safe house. "You guys," I pulled Hearth into a hug, "you look exactly like when I saw you in the bathroom." In retrospect, that was probably not the line to lead with. I backed up and explained what had been going on. The weird dreams, the weirder reality, Loki in my head in a pickle jar, Mimir's head in a bathtub, etc. "Yeah," Blitzen said. "The capo loves to show up in the bathtub. Almost scared me out of my chainmail pajamas one night." "That's an image I did not need," I said. "Also, we have to have a talk about communication. You guys just disappeared on me without a word." "Hey, kid, it was his idea." He signed this for Hearth's benefit, pinky touching the forehead, then pointing at Hearth with two fingers. "Idea? His. H for Hearthstone's name sign." Hearthstone grunted in irritation. He signed back. "To save you, dummy, tell Magnus." He made an M for my name sign, a fist with three fingers wrapped over his thumb. Blitzen sighed. "The elf is overreacting as usual. He got me all terrified and hustled me out of town. But I've calmed down now. It was just a little death prophecy." Sam untangled her backpack from the horse's saddlebags. She patted the horse's muzzle and pointed toward the sky, and our white stallion buddy took off for the clouds. "Blitzen," she turned. "You understand there's no such thing as a little death prophecy, right?" "I'm fine," Blitzen gave us a confident smile. Through the gauze netting, he looked like a slightly happier ghost. A few weeks ago, Hearthstone got back from his one-on-one rune magic class with Odin. He was all excited to read my future, so he cast the runes and... well, they didn't come out so good. "Not so good," Hearthstone stomped his foot. "Blitzen, bloodshed, cannot be stopped. Before O-S-T-A-R-A. "Right," Blitzen said. "That's what he read in the runes, but... "What's Ostara?" I asked. "The first day of spring," Sam said. "Which is in, 4 days. "The same day as your supposed wedding." "Believe me," she said sourly, "it wasn't my idea." "So Blitzen is supposed to die before that?" My stomach started climbing up my throat. "Bloodshed that cannot be stopped?" Hearthstone nodded emphatically. "He shouldn't be here." "I agree," I said. "It's too dangerous." "Guys," Blitzen tried for a hearty chuckle, "look, Hearthstone is new at reading the future. Maybe he misinterpreted. Bloodshed might actually be
tool shed. A tool shed that cannot be stopped. That would be a good omen.
Hearthstone held out his hands as if to strangle the dwarf, which needed no translation.
Besides, Blitz said, if there's a tomb here, it'll be underground. You need a dwarf.
Hearth launched into a flurry of angry signs, but Samira stepped in.
Blitz is right, she said, signing the message with a hot potato fist bump, both index fingers extended.
She'd gotten good at ASL since meeting Hearthstone, just, you know, in her spare time between gathering souls, making honor roll, and flying jet planes.
This is too important, she said. I wouldn't ask you otherwise. We have to find Thor's hammer before the first of spring, or entire worlds will be destroyed. Or, I'll have to marry a giant.
Another way, Hearth signed. Must be one. Don't even know hammer is here.
Buddy! Blitz took the elf's hands, which was kind of sweet, but also kind of rude, because it was the ASL equivalent of putting a gag on someone's mouth.
I know you're worried, but it'll be fine.
Blitz turned toward me. Besides, as much as I love this elf, I'm going crazy in that safe house. I'd rather die out here being useful to my friends than keep on watching TV and eating delivery pizza and waiting for Mimir's head to pop up in the bathtub.
Also, Hearthstone snores like you wouldn't believe.
Hearth yanked his hands back. You're not signing, but I can read lips, remember?
Hearth, Sam said, please.
Sam and Hearth had a staring contest so intense I could feel ice crystals forming in the air. I'd never seen those two so much at odds before, and I did not want to be in the middle. I was tempted to summon Jack and have him sing a Beyonce song just to give them a common enemy. At last, Hearthstone signed, if anything happens to him,
I take responsibility, Sam mouthed.
I could read lips, too, Blitzen said. And I can take responsibility for myself.
He rubbed his hands together eagerly.
Now, let's find the entrance to this barrow, eh? It's been months since I unearthed a malicious undead power.
Chapter 14. Cry me a blood river. Wait. Actually, don't. Just like the good old days, marching together into the unknown, searching for missing magical weapons and risking painful death, I'd missed my buddies. We walked halfway around the base of the tower before Blitzen said, "Aha!" He knelt and ran his gloved fingertips along a crack in the paving stones. To me, it didn't look any different from the thousands of other cracks in the stone, but Blitzen seemed to like this one. He grinned up at me. "Now you see, kid, you never would have found this without a dwarf. You would have walked around forever looking for the entrance to the tomb, and..."
"That crack is the entrance?"
"It's the trigger for the entrance, yeah, but we'll still need some magic to get in. Hearth, double-check this for me, will you?"
Hearth crouched next to him. He nodded like, "Yep," then traced a rune on the floor with his finger.
Immediately, a 10-foot square section of pavement vaporized, revealing a shaft that plunged straight down. Unfortunately, the four of us happened to be on the 10-foot square when it vaporized. We dropped into the darkness with a fair amount of screaming, most of which was mine. Good news. When I landed, I didn't break any bones. Bad news. Hearthstone did. I heard a wet snap, followed by Hearth's grunt, and I knew immediately what had happened. I'm not saying elves are fragile. In some ways, Hearth was the toughest guy I knew. But on occasion, I wanted to wrap him in blankets and slap a "Handle with Care" sticker on his forehead.
"Hold on, man,"
I told him, which was useless since he couldn't see me in the dark. I found his leg and quickly located the break. Hearth gasped and tried to claw the skin off my hands.
"What's going on?" Blitz demanded. "Whose elbow is this?"
"That's me," Sam said. "Everyone okay?"
"Hearth has a broken ankle," I said. "I need to fix it. You two keep watch."
"It's totally dark," Blitz complained.
"You're a dwarf," Sam slipped her axe from her belt, a sound I knew well. "I thought you thrived underground."
"I do," said Blitz. "Preferably in a well-lit and tastefully decorated underground."
Judging from the echo of our voices, we were in a large stone chamber. There was no light, so I assumed the shaft we'd fallen through had closed above us. In the plus column, nothing had attacked us. Yet. I found Hearth's hand and made sign letters against his palm so he wouldn't panic.
"Heal you. Be still."
Then I put both my hands on his broken ankle. I called on the power of Frey. Warmth blossomed in my chest and spread down my arms. My fingers glowed with a soft golden light, pushing back the darkness. I could feel the bones in Hearthstone's ankle knitting together, the swelling subsiding, his circulation returning to normal. He let out a long sigh and signed, "Thanks." I squeezed his knee. "No problem, man."
"So Magnus," Blitz said, his voice hoarse.
You might want to look around. One side effect of my healing power was that I temporarily glowed. I don't mean I looked healthy. I mean I actually glowed. In the daytime, it was hardly noticeable. But here, in a dark subterranean chamber, I looked like a human nightlight. Sadly, that meant I could now see our surroundings. We were in the middle of a dome chamber, like a giant beehive carved from rock. The apex of the ceiling, about 20 feet up, showed no sign of the hatch through which we had fallen. All around the circumference of the walls, in closet-sized niches, stood mummified men in rotted clothing, their leathery fingers clasped around the hilts of corroded swords. I saw no exit from the room.
"Well, this is perfect," I said. "They're going to wake up, aren't they? Those 10 guys...
12, Sam corrected. 12 guys with big swords," I said. My hand closed around my runestone pendant. Either Jack was trembling, or I was. I decided it must be Jack.
"They could just be terrifying, inanimate corpses," Blitz said. "Think positive."
Hearthstone snapped his fingers for attention. He pointed to the sarcophagus that stood upright in the center of the room. It's not that I hadn't noticed it. The big iron box was hard to miss. But I'd been trying to ignore it, hoping it would go away. The front was carved with ornate Viking images. Wolves, serpents, and runic inscriptions swirling around a central picture of a bearded man with a big sword. I had no idea what a coffin like this was doing on Cape Cod. I was pretty sure the pilgrims hadn't brought it over on the Mayflower. Sam motioned for us to stay put. She levitated off the floor and floated around the sarcophagus, her axe ready.
"Inscriptions on the back, too," she reported. "This sarcophagus is old. I don't see any sign that it's been opened recently, but perhaps Thrym hid the hammer inside."
"Here's an idea," Blitzen said. "Let's not check."
I glanced at him.
"That's your expert opinion?"
"Look, kid, this tomb reeks of ancient power. It was built well over 1,000 years ago, long before Viking explorers got to North America."
"How can you tell?"
"The marks on the rock," Blitzen said.
"I can tell when a chamber was hewn as easily as I can gauge the age of a shirt by the wear of the threads."
That didn't sound very easy to me. Then again, I didn't have a degree in dwarven fashion design.
"So it's a Viking tomb built before the Vikings got here," I said.
How is that possible?"
"It moved," Hearth signed.
"How can a tomb move?"
Blitzen took off his pith helmet. The gauze netting left a cowlick across his otherwise perfect hair. "Kid, stuff moves in the Nine Worlds all the time. We're connected by the World Tree, right? The branches sway. New branches grow. Roots deepen. This place has shifted from wherever it was originally built. Probably because, you know, it's imbued with evil magic."
Sam touched down next to us.
"Not a fan of evil magic."
Hearth pointed to the floor in front of the sarcophagus. I hadn't noticed before, but all around the base of the coffin, a faint circle of runes was etched in the stone. Hearth fingerspelled K-E-N-N-I-N-G.
"What's that?" I asked.
Samira edged a little closer to the inscription.
"A Kenning is a Viking nickname."
"You mean like, hey, Kenning, how's it going?"
"No," Sam said in that I am going to hit you with the stupid stick tone.
"It's a way of referring to somebody with a description instead of their name. Like, instead of Blitzen, I might say, Clever of Clothes, or for Hearthstone, Rune Lord."
Hearth nodded.
"You may call me Rune Lord."
Sam squinted at the inscription on the floor.
"Magnus, could you glow a little closer, please?"
"I'm not your flashlight," but I stepped toward the coffin.
"It says Blood River," Sam announced. "Over and over, all the way around."
"You can read Old Norse?" I asked.
"Old Norse is easy. You want difficult? Try learning Arabic."
Blood River. My bagel breakfast sat heavy in my gut.
"Does this remind anybody of bloodshed that cannot be stopped? I don't like it."
Even without his gauze netting, Blitz looked a little gray.
"It's probably a coincidence.
However, I would like to point out there are no exits from this room. My dwarven senses tell me these walls are solid all the way around. We've walked into a loaded trap. The only way out is to spring it."
"I'm starting to dislike your dwarven senses," I said.
"You and me both, kid."
Hearthstone glared at Blitzen.
"You wanted to come here. What now? Break Kenning Circle? Open coffin?"
Sam readjusted her hijab. "If there's a white in this tomb, it'll be in that sarcophagus. It's also the most secure place to hide a magical weapon, like a god's hammer."
"I need a second opinion," I pulled off my pendant.
Jack sprang to full length in my hand. Hey, guys. Ooh, a tomb imbued with evil magic? Cool. Buddy, can you sense Thor's hammer anywhere around here? Jack vibrated with concentration. Hard to be sure. There's something powerful in that box. A weapon? A magical weapon? Can we open it? Please, please? This is exciting. I resisted the urge to smack him upside the hilt, which would have only hurt me. You ever heard of an earth giant working with a white? Like, using its tomb as a safe deposit box? That would be strange, Jack admitted. Usually an earth giant just buries his stuff in, you know, the earth. Like, deep in the earth. I turned to Sam. So why would Otis send us here? And how is this a good idea? Sam glanced around the chamber like she was trying to decide which of the 12 mummies to hide behind. Look, maybe Otis was wrong. Maybe this was a wild goose chase, but...
But we're here now, Jack said.
Ah, come on, guys, I'll protect you. Besides, I can't stand an unopened present. At least let me shake the coffin to guess what's inside.
Hearthstone made a chopping motion against his palm. Enough already. From the inside pocket of his jacket, he produced a small leather pouch. His collection of runestones. He pulled out one I'd seen before.
That's Daga's, I said. We use that for opening doors in Valhalla.
Are you sure?
Harsh's expression stopped me. He didn't need sign language to convey how he felt. He regretted this whole situation. He hated putting Blitzen in danger. But we were here now. We'd brought him along because he knew magic. He wanted to get this over with.
Magnus, Sam said, you might want to step back.
I did, positioning myself in front of Blitzen, just in case Blood River sprang out of the coffin samurai style and went directly for the nearest dwarf. Hearth knelt. He touched Dagas to the inscription. Instantly, the Blood River Kenning ignited like a ring of gunpowder. Hearth backed away as the sarcophagus's iron lid blew right off, hurtling past me and slamming into the wall. Before us stood a mummified king in a silver crown and silver armor, with a sheathed sword clasped in his hands.
Wait for it, I muttered.
Naturally, the corpse opened his eyes. Chapter 15. All in favor of slaughtering Magnus? Please say aye. With most zombies, you don't expect conversation. I figured King Mummy would say, "Rawr," or at most, "Brains," and then get down to the business of killing us. I was not ready for, "Thank you, mortals. I am in your debt." He stepped out of his coffin, a little unsteadily since he was an emaciated corpse whose armor probably weighed more than he did, and did a tap dance of glee.
1,000 years in that stupid box, and now I'm free! Ha 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 ha!
Behind him, the inner walls of his coffin were scored with hundreds of marks where he'd been keeping track of years. There was no sign of Thor's hammer, though, which meant the zombie had been locked in there without a decent way to stream Netflix. Jack quivered with excitement.
Will you look at that sword? She's so hot!
I did not know, one, how he could tell the sword was female, or two, how he could tell she was hot. I was not sure I wanted answers to those questions. Sam, Blitz, and Hearth edged away from the zombie. Jack's point floated toward the lady's sword, but I forced him to the floor and leaned on him. I didn't want him to offend Mr. Zombie or his blade by being too forward.
Hi, I told the zombie. I'm Magnus.
You have a lovely golden glow.
Thanks. So how is it that you're speaking English?
Am I?
The king tilted his ghoulish head. Wisps of white clung to his chin, maybe cobwebs or the remnants of a beard. His eyes were green and bright and entirely human.
Perhaps it's magic. Perhaps we are communicating on a spiritual level. Whatever the case, thank you for releasing me. I am Galeer, Prince of the Danes.
Blitzen peeked out from behind me.
Galeer?
Is Blood River your nickname?
Galeer's laugh sounded like a maraca filled with wet sand. No, my dwarven friend. Blood River is a kenning I earned from my blade, the Skolfnung sword.
Clunk, clunk. Hearth had backed into the coffin lid and fallen over it. He stayed in crabwalk position, his eyes wide with shock.
Ah, Galeer said. I see your elf has heard of my sword.
Jack lurched under my elbow.
Senor? I've heard of her, too. She's like...
Wow, she's famous.
Wait, Sam said. Prince Galeer, is there possibly a hammer around here somewhere? We heard you might have a hammer.
The zombie frowned,
which caused fault lines to open on his leathery face.
A hammer? No. Why would I want a hammer when I am the Lord of the Sword?
Sam's eyes dimmed, or maybe that was just my glow starting to fade.
You're sure? I asked. I mean, the Lord of the Sword is great, but you could also be, I don't know, the Slammer of the Hammer.
Galeer kept his gaze on Sam. His frown deepened.
One moment. Are you a woman?
Yes, Prince Galeer. My name is Samira Al-Abbas. We call her the Max with the Axe, I offered.
I will hurt you, Sam hissed at me.
A woman, Galeer tugged at his chin, pulling off some of his cobweb whiskers. That's a shame. I can't unsheathe my sword in the presence of a woman.
Oh, what a bummer, Jack said. I want to meet Scofi.
Hearthstone struggled to his feet. He signed, We should leave, now, not let zombie draw sword.
What is your elf doing? Galeer asked. Why does he make those strange gestures?
It's sign language, I said. He, doesn't want you to draw your sword. He says we should leave.
But I can't allow that. I must show my gratitude. Also, I need to kill you.
My glow was definitely fading now. When Jack spoke, his runes lit the tomb in ominous red flashes.
Hey, zombie guy?
Gratitude is usually more like sending a nice card, and less like, I need to kill you.
Oh, I'm very grateful, Galeer protested. But I'm also a Draugr, the chief white of this barrow. You are trespassing, so after I finish thanking you properly, I'll have to consume your flesh and devour your souls. But, alas, the Skolfnung sword has very clear restrictions. It cannot be drawn in daylight, or in the presence of a woman.
Those are stupid rules, Sam said. I mean, those are very sensible rules. So you can't kill us?
No, Galeer allowed. But don't worry, I can still have you killed.
He wrapped the sheath of his sword 3 times against the floor. To absolutely no one's surprise, the 12 mummified warriors stepped out from their niches along the walls. The Draugr had zero respect for zombie cliches. They did not shamble. They didn't moan incoherently or act dazed like proper zombies should. They drew their weapons in perfect unison and stood ready for Galeer's order to kill.
This is bad, said Jack, master of the obvious. I'm not sure I can take out this many before they kill you guys. And I don't want to look incompetent in front of that hot lady sword.
Priorities, Jack, I said.
Exactly. I hope you've got a plan that makes me look good.
Sam gave us a new light source. In her free hand, a glowing spear appeared, the field weapon of a Valkyrie. Its harsh white light made the zombies' faces start to steam. Hearthstone hefted his pouch of runestones. Blitzen whipped off his bow tie, which, like his entire line of spring fashion, was lined with ultra-flexible chainmail. He wrapped the tie around his fist, ready to smash some zombie faces. I didn't like our odds, 4 against 13, or 5 if you included Jack as a separate person. I didn't, because that meant I would have to pull my own weight. I wondered if I could invoke the Peace of Frey. Thanks to my dad, a pacifist-type god who didn't allow fighting in his sacred places, I could sometimes disarm everyone in a wide circle around me, blasting their weapons right out of their hands. That was kind of my finishing trick, though. I would look really dumb if I tried it now in this enclosed space and the zombies just picked up their swords again and killed us. Before I could decide what would be most impressive to a hot lady sword, one of the zombies raised his hand. Do we have a quorum? Prince Galeer slumped as though one of his vertebrae had disintegrated.
Arvid, he said. We've been locked in this chamber for centuries. Of course we have a quorum. We're all present because we can't leave.
Then I move that we call this meeting to order, said another dead man.
Oh, for the love of Thor, Galeer complained. We're here to massacre these mortals, feed on their flesh, and take their souls. That's obvious. Then we'll have enough strength to break free of our tomb and wreak havoc upon Cape Cod. Do we really need...
I second, called another zombie.
Galeer smacked his own skeletal forehead.
Fine. All in favor?
The 12 other dead guys raised their hands.
Then this massacre, meeting is called to order.
Galeer turned to me, his eyes gleaming with irritation.
My apologies, but we vote on everything in this group. It's the tradition of the thing.
What thing?
You know, the thing, Galeer said. From the word Thingvellir, meaning Field of the Assembly, the Norse Voting Council.
Ah, Sam wavered between her axe hand and her spear hand, as if unsure which to use, or whether that decision would require a new motion. I've heard of the thing. It was a site where ancient Norse met to settle legal disputes and make political decisions. The meetings inspired the idea of Parliament.
Yes, yes, Galeer said.
Now, the English Parliament. That wasn't my fault, personally. But when the pilgrims came along... He pointed his chin toward the ceiling. Well, by that time, our tomb had been here for centuries. The pilgrims landed, camped out over us for a few weeks. They must have subconsciously felt our presence. I'm afraid we inspired the Mayflower Compact, started all that business about rights and democracy in America, blah, blah, blah.
May I take the minutes? Asked the zombie.
Galeer sighed.
Dagfinn, honestly. Fine, you're secretary.
I love being secretary.
Dagfinn stuck his sword back in its sheath. He pulled a notepad and a pen from his belt, though what a Viking corpse was doing with school supplies, I couldn't tell you.
So, wait, Sam said. If you've been stuck in that box, how do you know what was going on outside the tomb?
Galeer rolled his lovely green eyes.
Telepathic powers, duh.
Anyway, ever since we inspired the pilgrims, my 12 bodyguards have been insufferably proud of themselves. We have to do everything by parliamentary rules, or thingamentary rules. Not to worry, though. We'll kill you soon enough. Now, I make a motion. First, another zombie interrupted. Is there any old business?
Galeer made a fist so tight I thought his hand would crumble.
Knut, we are Draugr from the 6th century. For us, everything is old business.
I move that we read the minutes from the last meeting, said Arvid. Do I hear a second? Harstone raised two fingers. I didn't blame him. The more time they spent reading the minutes of past massacres, the less time they'd have for killing us in a future one. Dagfinn flipped back in his notebook. The pages turned to dust in his fingers.
Actually, I don't have those minutes.
Well then, Galeer said. Moving right along.
Wait,
Blitzen cried. We need an oral accounting. I want to hear about your pasts, who you are, why you were all buried together, and the names and histories of all your weapons. I'm a dwarf. The heritage of things is important to me, especially if those things are going to kill me. I motion that you tell us everything.
I second the motion, Samira said. All in favor?
Every zombie raised his hand, including Galeer, I guess out of habit, who then looked quite annoyed with himself. Jack shot into the air to make the vote unanimous. Galeer shrugged, causing his armor and bones to creak.
You're making this massacre very difficult, but all right. I will recount our story. Gentlemen, at ease.
The other zombies sheathed their swords. Some sat on the floor. Others leaned against the wall and crossed their arms. Arvin and Knut retrieved bags of yarn and knitting needles from their niches and began to work on mittens.
So I am Galeer, began the prince. Son of Thorkell, a prince among the Danes. And this, he patted his sword, is Skofnung, the most famous blade ever wielded by a Viking.
Present company accepted, Jack murmured. But, oh man, Skofnung is a hot name. I didn't agree with him. I also didn't like the look of terror on Hearthstone's face. Hearth, you know this sword? The elf signed cautiously, as if the air might burn his fingers. First belonged to King H-R-O-L-F. Was forged with souls of his 12 followers, all berserkers.
What is he saying? Galeer demanded. Those hand gestures are very annoying.
I started to translate, but Blitzen interrupted, shrieking so loudly that Arvid and Knut dropped their knitting needles.
That sword? Blitz stared at Hearthstone. The one with... the stone? Your house?
This made no sense to me, but Hearth nodded. Now you see, he signed.
We should not have come.
Sam turned, her spear's light making dust sizzle on the floor.
What do you mean? What stone? And what does it have to do with Thor's hammer?
Excuse me, Galeer said. I believe I was speaking. If you came here looking for Thor's hammer... I'm afraid someone gave you very bad information.
We have to live through this, I told my friends. There's a goat I need to kill.
Ahem, Galeer continued. As I was saying, the Skofnung sword was created by a king named Rolf. His 12 berserkers sacrificed their lives so their souls could instill the blade with power.
Galeer scowled at his own men, two of whom were now playing cards in the corner.
Those were the days when a prince could find good bodyguards.
At any rate, a man named Eid stole the sword from Rolf's grave. Eid lent it to my father, Thorkell, who sort of forgot to return it.
My dad died in a shipwreck, but the sword washed ashore in Iceland. I found it and used it in many glorious massacres. And now, here we are. When I died in battle, the sword was buried with me, along with my 12 berserkers, for protection. Dagfinn flipped a page in his notebook and jotted, "For protection." Can I add that we expected to go to Valhalla? That we were cursed to stay in this tomb forever because your sword was stolen property, and that we hate our afterlives? No, Galeer snapped. How many times do you want me to apologize? Arvid looked up from his half-finished mittens. I move that Galeer apologize a million more times. Do I hear a second? Stop that, Galeer said. Look, we have guests. Let's not air our dirty under-tunics, eh? Besides, once we kill these mortals and devour their souls, we'll have enough power to break out of this tomb. I can't wait to check out Provincetown. I imagine 13 zombie Vikings marching down Commercial Street, barging into the Wired Puppy coffee shop and demanding espresso drinks at sword point. But enough old business, Galeer said. Can I please introduce a motion to kill these intruders? I second. Dagfinn shook his ballpoint pen. I'm out of ink anyway. No, Blitzen said. We need more discussion. I don't know the names of these other weapons. And those knitting needles, tell me about them. You're out of order, Galeer said. I move that we be shown the nearest exit, I said. Galeer stomped his foot. You're also out of order. I call for a vote. Dagfinn looked at me apologetically.
It's a thing. You wouldn't understand.
I should have attacked immediately while they were off guard, but that seemed undemocratic. All in favor? Galeer called. Aye! The dead Vikings cried in unison. They got to their feet, put away their cards and various knitting projects, and drew their swords once again. Chapter 16. Hearthstone unleashes his inner bovine. Jack decided this was an excellent time to give me a training session. Despite being fully capable of fighting on his own, he had the strong belief that I should learn to wield him with my own power. Something about me being worthy and competent or whatever. The thing is, I sucked at swordplay. Also, Jack always decided to train me in the worst possible situations. No time like the present, he yelled, turning heavy and unhelpful in my grip. Come on, man! I ducked the first blade that swung toward my head. Let's practice later, on mannequins or something. Dodge left, Jack yelled. Your other left! Make me proud, senor! The Skofnung blade is watching! I was almost tempted to die just to embarrass Jack in front of the lady sword. But since I was outside Valhalla and my death would be permanent, I decided that particular plan might be short-sighted. The zombies crowded in. The cramped quarters were our only advantage. Each Draugr was armed with a broadsword, which requires about 5 feet of free space for effective swinging. 12 dead berserkers with broadswords surrounding a tight-knit group of defenders in a small chamber? I don't care how good you are at forming a quorum. You're just not going to be able to massacre those defenders very easily without hacking apart your comrades as well. Our melee turned into an awkward shuffle with a lot of shoving, cursing, and bad zombie breath. Samira thrust her spear under Arvid's jaw. The weapon's light burned away his head like a flame going through toilet paper. Another zombie jabbed at Blitzen's chest, but Blitz's chainmail-lined vest bent the blade. Blitz slammed his bowtie-wrapped fist into the zombie's gut, and much to everyone's disgust, got his hand stuck in the zombie's abdominal cavity. Gross! Blitzen proceeded to lurch backward, yanking the zombie along, swinging him like a clumsy dance partner and knocking other Draugr out of the way. Hearthstone took the award for most improved in melee combat. He slammed down a runestone. He was immediately encased in golden light. He grew taller. His muscles swelled as though someone were inflating his clothes. His eyes turned bloodshot. His hair splayed with static. He grabbed the nearest zombie and tossed him across the room. Then he picked up another one and literally broke him in half over his knee. As you can guess, the other zombies backed away from the crazy, overinflated elf. What rune is that? I accidentally swung Jack through the top of Galeer's sarcophagus, giving it a sunroof. Blitz yanked his hand free from his dance partner, who collapsed into pieces. Uruts, Blitz said. The rune of the ox. I silently added an Uruts rune to my Christmas wish list. Meanwhile, Samira cut through her enemies, twirling her spear in one hand like a shiny baton of death. Any zombie who managed to avoid going up in flames, she chopped down with her axe. Jack continued shouting unhelpful advice. Parry Magnus! Duck! Defense Pattern Omega! I was pretty sure that wasn't even a thing. The few times I managed to hit a zombie, Jack cut him to pieces, but I doubted the moves were impressive enough to win Jack a date with the lady sword.
When it became clear that Galeer was running out of bodyguards, he leaped into battle himself, whacking me with his sheathed sword and yelling, "Bad mortal! Bad mortal!" I tried to fight back, but Jack resisted. Probably he thought it would be unchivalrous to fight a lady, especially one who was stuck in her sheath. Jack was old-fashioned that way. Finally, Galeer was the only Draugr left. His bodyguards lay strewn across the floor in a ghastly collection of arms, legs, weapons, and knitting supplies. Galeer backed toward his sarcophagus, cradling the Skofnung sword against his chest. "Hold on. Point of order. I move that we table all further combat until..." Hearthstone objected to Galeer's motion by rushing the prince and ripping his head off. Galeer's body toppled forward, and our roid-raging elf stomped him flat, kicking and scattering the desiccated remains until there was nothing left but the Skofnung sword. Hearthstone started to kick that, too. "Stop him!" Jack yelled. I grabbed Hearth's arm, which was definitely the bravest thing I'd done that day. He rounded on me, his eyes blazing with fury. "He's dead," I signed. "You can stop now." Chances were high that I was going to get decapitated again. Then Hearthstone blinked, his bloodshot eyes cleared, his muscles deflated, his hair settled against his scalp. He crumpled, but Blitzen and I were both there to catch him. We gotten used to Hearthstone's post-magic passouts. Sam stuck her spear into Dagfinn's corpse and left it standing up like a giant glow stick. She paced the tomb, cursing under her breath. "I'm sorry, guys. All that risk, all that effort, and no Mjolnir." "Hey, it's cool," Jack said. "We rescued the Skofnung sword from her evil master. She's going to be so grateful. We have to take her with us." Blitzen waved his orange handkerchief in Hearth's face, trying to revive him. "Taking that sword would be a very bad idea." "Why?" I asked. And why did Hearth look so freaked out when he heard its name? "You said something about a stone?" Blitz cradled Hearth's head in his lap like he was trying to protect the elf from our conversation. "Kid, whoever sent us here, it was a trap, all right. But the Draugr were the least dangerous things in this chamber. Somebody wanted us to free that sword." A familiar voice said, "You're absolutely right." My heart jackknifed. Standing in front of Galeer's sarcophagus were the two men I least wanted to see in the Nine Worlds, Uncle Randolph and Loki. Behind them, the back panel of the sawed-off coffin had become a shimmering doorway. On the other side lay Randolph's study. Loki's scarred lips twisted into a grin. "Good job finding the bride price, Magnus. The sword is perfect." Chapter 17. Uncle Randolph gets on my naughty list big time. Sam reacted fastest. She grabbed her spear.